This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Coming up this afternoon, we'll look back at all of the Premier League action from the weekend. As per usual, plenty to talk about. Some very intriguing results, including a win for West Ham away at Chelsea. A long time coming, well over a decade since the last time West Ham won at Stamford Bridge. Liverpool continued their unbeaten start to the Premier League season, but perhaps a slightly nervier ending than was anticipated at Anfield. A crucial win for Ralf Hasenhüttl as the Southampton manager, but it proved fateful for Kike Sanchez. Flores' Freddie Ljungberg's first game in interim head charge ended in a 1-1 draw, and then a drama at the King Power Stadium with a late goal for Leicester, which won them that game. If you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. Remember, if you want to get in touch, that number again, 0208 7020 558. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, plenty to talk about in the Premier League this afternoon. Another intriguing action, and we only have to wait, another 36 hours before it all gets underway again in the Premier League. Fixtures on Tuesday night, Wednesday night and Thursday night this week. So not long to wait before our Premier League fix is back. Obviously throughout today's show and throughout the week, we'll obviously be looking ahead to those midweek fixtures. We have the likes of Burnley-Manchester City tomorrow night. Then we have Liverpool-Everton in the Merseyside Derby and Manchester United against Tottenham on Wednesday night. Thursday night we have Brighton playing against Arsenal, I believe. So plenty to talk about as the week goes along. But first, let's look back at the Premier League weekend. It all started on a Saturday lunchtime at St James's Park as Newcastle hosted Manchester City. And Manchester City dropping points again away at Newcastle. It finished 2-2, but the latter stages of the game were a real joy for people to watch. Two absolute stunners. If you haven't seen them, make sure you go and watch them. Kevin De Bruyne chesting it down, volleying it from outside the box off the underside of the bar. It was a pretty spectacular way for City to take the lead late on, but Jonjo Shelvey's strike from outside the box from a well-worked free kick from Christian Atsu meant that all the points were shared at St James's Park. Then to Turf Moor, where Burnley lost 2-0 at home against Crystal Palace. For many, probably a shock result, but Roy Hodgson and his Crystal Palace side do have a very good recent record at Turf Moor in recent years. Wilfred Zaha had gone through 13 straight Premier League games without a goal. Well, it's back-to-back goals in successive weekends for Wilfred Zaha. At Stamford Bridge, a shock result. Chelsea 0, West Ham 1. It seemed like Manuel Pellegrini was on the edge. He was on the verge of being sacked, but a big result. Aaron Cresswell's goal proved to be the winner. And some pretty emotional scenes at the end of the game for David Martin, obviously the son of Alvin Martin, a West Ham great on his first Premier League start. He keeps a clean sheet away at Chelsea. Pretty emotional after the game and went to hug his father in the stands near the media area. So some pretty emotional scenes for David Martin. How big a result is that? Perhaps more so for Manuel Pellegrini, the manager himself, rather than just West Ham. At Anfield, it looked like Liverpool were cruising towards 3 points with 15 minutes to go, thanks to two Virgil van Dijk goals. But Alisson sending off with 15 minutes to go, and then Lewis Dunk's quickly taken free kick meant that it was, for Liverpool fans like myself, a rather nervy final 10 minutes of that game. But Liverpool continuing their unbeaten start to the season. Three more points against Brighton. It's now 31 games in the league unbeaten, which ties Liverpool's all-time record from the late 80s. Liverpool in pretty emphatic form at the start of this season. At the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, quite a similar story actually, where Tottenham raced into a 3-0 lead, two goals from the resurgent Dele Alli. But late on, two Harry Wilson goals meant that it was an incredibly nervy finish. It could have resulted in a draw late on, Bournemouth having a chance in about the 97th, 98th minute of added time to equalise. Then the final game on Saturday was on the South Coast, and it felt like a huge game for whichever manager was going to go and lose. Watford had taken the lead through Ismaïla Sarr, his first goal since making a big money move from Rennes over the summer. But it was not to be for Watford. Once Danny Ings had scored, it felt like the confidence had completely seeped out of Watford and then was transferred to Southampton as James Ward-Prowse scored a stunning free kick to give Ralph Hasenhüttl's men all 3 points. And as we'll talk about, it spelt the end for Kike Sanchez Flores at Watford. Then on to Sunday, four games for us to enjoy yesterday afternoon at Carrow Road. Full of drama there. Norwich 2, Arsenal 2 in Freddie Ljungberg's first game in interim charge. That was not without controversy as Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang had missed the penalty for the first goal, but was then allowed to retake that. We'll talk about that in just a few moments' time. It finished 2-2 then at Carrow Road. At Molineux, another good performance away from home for Sheffield United. And what a fantastic start to the season. What a good job Chris Wilder is doing there as it finished Wolves 1, Sheffield United 1. Another goal for Lys Moussa. At Old Trafford, it finished Manchester United 2, Aston Villa 2. More points dropped for Manchester United. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should be looking over his shoulder at this moment in time. And at the King Power, one of the most dramatic games of the weekend, where Leicester came from 1-0 down to beat Everton 2-1. But as we'll talk about in a few moments' time, that was not without some controversy and without some big decisions to be made in that game. So as we look at the Premier League table, before we talk at the big talking points of the weekend, Liverpool still top of the table, 13 wins out of 14, 40 points out of a possible 42. They maintain their 8-point advantage over Leicester in second on 32 points. Manchester City only 29 points. They're 11 points off the top of the table. Chelsea, after back-to-back defeats, they are in fourth place on 26 points. Tottenham up to fifth after back-to-back wins under Jose Mourinho. Wolves also on 20 points. Sheffield United, seventh place on 19 points. What a terrific job they've done in promotion this season. Towards the bottom, Watford rooted to the bottom. They are on 8 points. Norwich, 3 points clear of that in 19th. Southampton in 18th on 12 points. Everton are slipping further and further towards the relegation zone. Pressure ramping up on Marco Silva. And let's start off with that game at the King Power Stadium, where the pressure is certainly increasing on Marco Silva. How much longer will he last? According to Sky Sports, they believe that Marco Silva will remain in charge for the Merseyside derby at Anfield against Liverpool on Wednesday night. When I see something like that, I sort of think, we're just simply reporting someone's going to be doing their job. I don't really think is a headline. Now, I think he should be sacked, but his job at this moment in time, how much longer for, we don't know. But at this moment in time, he is the manager of Everton. So simply stating that he is going to be in charge for their next game, I don't think is worthy of a particularly big headline. But Everton were 1-0 up for a long period in that game. Two big decisions to make. Firstly, was in the first half when Ben Chilwell thought he'd won a penalty for Leicester. It was given initially and then was overturned. Now, when you first see it, Mason Holgate just kind of goes for an almighty whack, chop at the ball, and it seems inevitable that he must have made contact. But I think a terrific decision there by VAR. I didn't think they would overturn it. I didn't think they'd have the bottle to do it. But it was a terrific decision because there was absolutely no contact. What I don't get is why Ben Chilwell didn't get booked, if I'm being brutally honest, because it was quite clearly a dive. And the second issue was then Kelechi Iheanacho's winner in the 95th minute of the game. Now, rightly, it was given onside because although the flag went up to give offside, he was being played onside by Yerry Mina. One question I'd have, now maybe it was because the referee's whistle hadn't been blown, which therefore didn't stop play. If you remember back to Henry Lansbury's goal for Aston Villa away at Crystal Palace, where it was given for a dive by Jack Grealish, the whistle had blown, so it couldn't have been given a goal, whatever was the case. If I were an Everton fan or a player, I would feel aggrieved with that because the linesman, even though he shouldn't have given that because it was such a small gap between the players, it was such a tight decision, I thought linesmen have been given the directive not to put their flag up, that the flag had gone up. And yes, you go back to when you're 5 years old and you're always told to play by the whistle, but the flag did go up, implying that they thought it was offside. So I wasn't sure whether I'd be particularly happy if I was on the receiving end of that. But Iheanacho was onside. So strictly speaking, VAR was right in that situation. Brendan Rodgers said he was perfectly happy with the referee's performance. I don't think if Leicester had not scored that final goal and the Chilwell one therefore would have been an opportunity to win that game, I'm not sure whether Brendan Rodgers would have been too complimentary of that. Some interesting comments by Brendan Rodgers also after the game, hinting at a release clause at Leicester amid strong links with the Arsenal job after Unai Emery sacking on Friday. A strange thing to say, why you would open the door for something like that if you weren't interested. If he wasn't interested in the Arsenal job, he'd have simply turned around and said, well, I've got a perfectly good job at Leicester. I'm building a good thing. Why on earth would I want to leave? Opening the door to what's supposedly a £14 million release clause, I don't think is necessarily what all Leicester fans want to hear. At Carrow Road, Freddie Ljungberg's first game in interim charge as Arsenal search continues. Supposedly Nuno Espirito Santo has fallen out of favour for that job. Interestingly, Bukayo Saka coming on. Now, that's not necessarily a big story, but it's the fact that £72 million signing Nicola Pepe was left on the bench. Is that a sign of things to come? He's still very, very new, and I think it's maybe too early to judge him completely, but the pressure is certainly ramping up on Pepe just after that huge money move in the summer. Also, the Aubameyang penalty. Now, Arsenal were given a penalty after a handball by Zimmerman. Maybe he was fouled, but why on earth you've got your arm up like that? Aubameyang then steps up. I just said before the penalty was taken, Tim Krul's always been notoriously a good penalty saver. He then saves the penalty and it goes away for, I believe it was a corner to Arsenal. But then VAR steps in, overrules and orders for the penalty to be retaken. And that was due to the fact that Max Ahrens had impeded his body, was in the penalty area. Now, strictly speaking, by the letter of the law, I think there's no doubting that VAR stepped in the right way there. That actually, you saw it earlier in the season with Manchester City and West Ham. Declan Rice had impeded into the box when Aguero missed the penalty and then was the one to clear it. That's one of the big differences. I just think with that, I mean, people complain about offsides. I'm not sure that whether that should be the rule, if I'm being brutally honest. Strictly speaking, yes, he was in the box and VAR got the call right. Not sure whether the rule is right or not, but a big call there. Some pretty good stunners in the game at St. James's Park that I mentioned, Kevin De Bruyne and Jonjo Shelvey. I'm sure the fans of both clubs will have different views on which one was better. They were two spectacular goals. Is the pressure decreasing on Manuel Pellegrini after West Ham's win at Chelsea? I doubt that. A crucial victory for Southampton and Ralf Hasenhüttl. It relieves the pressure off him, but it certainly increased the pressure enough on Kike Sanchez-Flores. The news was starting to break on Saturday evening that Kike Sanchez-Flores was about to lose his job, and as yesterday proved, that was to be the end for him. One of a number of managers that's been sacked only in the last couple of weeks. What does the future hold? If you want to get in touch, your views on the manager situation in the Premier League, already a few have gone. How many more could go? Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We'll be back after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock. If you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking about or going on Manager Watch. It's been a crazy few weeks for the managers in the Premier League. It seemed rather strange that we got to the third international break and only one had gone. It had been Javi Gracia after just four games, replaced by Kike Sanchez-Flores at Watford. But in the last couple of weeks, Poch gone at Tottenham, Jose in. Then Unai Emery sacked by Arsenal still to find out who is going in. And then Watford yesterday decided after just 85 days in the job, Kike Sanchez-Flores wasn't the right man. Whether he was the right man in the first place is a completely different question. And still a number are to come. I'm joined by producer Laurie in the studio. Laurie, when that news came yesterday, what were your first thoughts? That this was fully deserved? Or were you thinking, so why on earth did they appoint him in the first place?
Weirdly, I'd actually rung a
certain athletic person in Watford who said the other day that he pretty much knew that it was going to happen before even the weekend. So I wasn't surprised, but I don't know. I think it was just an odd appointment in the first place. I think it was hard for him. Obviously, he got that draw to start with. Was it 2-2 with Arsenal?
Yeah.
Which was, you know, a pretty decent result based on how they'd been playing. But he just never got any momentum. And it wasn't really a fresh appointment. It wasn't something where you thought he was going to come in and completely change the way they were playing. And also what was difficult about it is Watford had had such a good season last season under Javi Gracia and started so badly that it was almost like, you know, you were wondering what was going to be done differently, because there's plenty of evidence that Javi Gracia can set a team up well, can do well. And actually, you sort of had to ask the question of whether there was already just a sort of downward trajectory in terms of how the squad were performing, completely low on confidence. And that's certainly something that Flores hasn't seemed to manage to muster in the squad. And you do fear for Watford, because the record of clubs who've had more than two managers in a Premier League season is not great. I think Don Betts could tell you about Fulham's, was they four managers in one season, when Felix Magath finished the season off and they went down. But yeah, you do fear for them, because it's going to take a lot to turn it around. And also, who is going to want to come in to that sort of job? Because there's a difference between a challenge and something where you don't really think you're going to be able to, you know, actually give your best input. I saw quite a funny tweet, I thought, from a rival sports broadcaster, shall we say, and he said, after Sanchez Flores sacked by Watford, I'm hearing Javi Gracia coming back for the next couple of months before, yes, Sanchez Flores comes back in Feb and Marco Silva due to do April and May.
I had seen that as well.
So I thought that was quite funny, and hopefully Watford fans will be thinking that it won't be like that, and, you know, someone can come in and somehow really instill confidence in the players and allow them to play in a way that they're clearly capable of based on what they did last season.
So obviously they're on the lookout for their third manager, Moroni, at the start of December. You look at the names being linked, the two front runners for the job, supposedly Chris Hughton and Paul Clement. Now, Chris Hughton apparently is, according to the Times today, not really going to be in the running, along with Tony Pulis and Sam Allardyce, the same old names thrown up. Paul Clement just seems, I don't really get that appointment. Where do they go? Or are they going to do what they usually do, spring a surprise by plucking someone out of obscurity, and then suddenly they start well and inevitably will just fade away at some point?
Yeah, I mean, they must be thinking back now and just wishing that they hadn't been so quick to bring in Sanchez Flores again, because wasn't it something ridiculous about 30 minutes after they'd announced him sacking?
It was pretty quick. It took the Tottenham replacing Pochettino with Mourinho to another level. They didn't even wait until the next day. They just waited minutes and then decided to change.
Yeah, absolutely. So, if I were Hughton, I don't think I'd be super interested. If I were Chris Hughton, I don't know why he's turning his nose up at some of these championship jobs where there's a club on an upward trajectory. He can take them up, do what he did with Brighton, keep them in, because people are saying a bigger job's going to come up for him. I don't know if it necessarily is going to be a bigger job coming up for him than Watford, but having said that, I wouldn't necessarily say it's the best option for him to take Watford, because, you know, he's got a pedigree of bringing clubs up. He did it when he went down with Newcastle and came up. When he brought Newcastle back up, and he did it, of course, with Brighton and kept them up and never actually got relegated, even though he was very lucky last season. But I don't think he'll get a bigger job, but I also don't think Watford would be a sensible job for Hughton. Paul Clement, as he said, bit of a bizarre one. He's the classic case of why assistant managers aren't necessarily good and why people should be very wary about calling Arteta the next Guardiola. I don't know. It's a really difficult one. I mean, all their record in terms of hiring does show that they're quite likely to pick someone potentially from Spain, potentially from Italy, who doesn't have the sort of more cultured CV of managers that are always being talked about. Having said that, I don't know. Is it is it just as much of a risk to take sort of a jaded Premier League manager as it is to take someone from Europe? And maybe they're thinking about next season. That's obviously another element in the equation. You'd think it's maybe a touch early for that. It's not like Huddersfield last year when they were essentially adrift. So I think they need to think about it carefully, but equally they haven't really got long, have they?
Another club that could be on the lookout for a new manager very soon at Everton after their 2-1 defeat in quite dramatic circumstances yesterday. The pressure again ramping up on Marco Silva. Now, it's been reported that he will still be in charge for the Merseyside derby at Anfield on Wednesday evening. If he, well, I suppose first and foremost, do you think he should be sat? Do you think he's got to that point where Everton should make the decision? If so, where should they be looking? Because inevitably so many names are thrown in the mix. So many different names as well, both kind of both ends of the spectrum, have been at the club before in the form of David Moyes, someone like Eddie Howe, who hasn't had an opportunity at a bigger club than Bournemouth. Where should they go if they do sack Silva?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I didn't think they were bad at all, and I think they would have been pretty gutted to lose that game to that late Iheanacho VAR goal. Obviously, it was completely right that it was allowed, and I quite like Iheanacho. I've got a bit of a soft spot for him, so I thought it was a shame that he couldn't celebrate, but you did get that element of the second celebration. Having said that, in terms of Everton, it seems like they are going to sack him. So it looks like it's a case of timing. I thought the players still looked like they were playing for Marco Silva this weekend. But if it is a case of timing, some people are saying, why would you bring in someone before the game against Liverpool? That's the best team they're going to have played all season. Wait until afterwards. I'd actually say, why wouldn't you bring them in before that derby? It's completely different. It's a completely different type of game when you're playing a local derby, irrespective of who the team is. And yes, Liverpool have been phenomenal this season, but they've conceded a lot of goals. A club very drilled. You know, Everton do have quality players. Obviously, Richarlison's just signed a new contract. I'd say that this week, rather than after the game, would be the perfect time to bring someone in. But obviously, they do then have to have an option to bring in, and if they're sort of in the position where they think, yes, we're ready to sack Marco Silva, but actually we're not ready to appoint somebody else, that's potentially why they're waiting longer. It's hard to know. Again, with Watford, I mean, obviously it's a different type of job, because realistically Everton aren't going to be in a relegation battle, but you know, what do you pick? Like, at Everton, when Sam Allardyce came in, the fans clearly hated any sort of defensive ideology. I mean, you talk about the managers who are available. Everton can't be considered a top club. They're never going to be able to attract the sort of Mourinho appointment that Spurs now can do. But equally, a Chris Hughton, in my opinion, is not going to be the sort of manager that is good enough for Everton to be where they want to be. I mean, we keep hearing about where Everton should be and they never ever do it, so you could argue that maybe he's exactly the sort of manager that represents their quality. But I would argue that they need someone a little better. I don't know, like, who can they, is potentially Rafa Benitez sort of manager someone they need, and would he go there? You know, he loves his house on the Wirral, but is he waiting for a bigger job? I absolutely don't know who they can pick, and I think that's probably what's kind of on their mind at the moment, because they are that sort of middle level club where they can definitely underhire and they can't overhire, because they don't have the ability to attract those managers. So I think they're actually in quite a difficult position, which is maybe why they're kind of dragging their heels a little bit.
One club that are on the lookout for a new manager, Arsenal, after sacking Unai Emery on Friday. Freddie Ljungberg took over as interim head coach. Now, we don't know how long that's going to be, but I would sincerely doubt that it would be long term. Brendan Rodgers seemingly opened the door a little bit in his press conference after Leicester won yesterday. Do you think he is becoming more and more the front runner? And after his comments yesterday, do you think that he has made that move even more likely? And he proved last season with Celtic to Leicester, he's willing to move mid-season. He's not reluctant to make a big decision. He's done that at previous clubs as well. I think Watford fans are not particularly with him going back years and years. So do you think that after what he said yesterday, the chance of him moving to Arsenal have only increased?
I think it's slightly different. Obviously, he was at Celtic a while. When he left, I think the Leicester job could have gone. if he hadn't have taken it. They were in a good position. They did end up winning the league. He didn't really derail their season in any way. And in terms of this season, Arsenal, again, don't have loads and loads of options. If that's the manager they want, I think, and I thought this with Leicester last season, that Brendan Rodgers is a good enough manager that they could have waited and appointed him at the end, and clearly they made a real decision in making a beeline for him and taking him. I think with Arsenal it's different, especially given the position that Leicester are currently in. I think that maybe he was making those comments to say, look, I do have this clause, and he wanted that to be the case and made known, because, you know, unquestionably Arsenal should be a bigger club than Leicester. But I think if he's sensible, I'm sure this is what he's thinking, that he'll look to want to be appointed by Arsenal, if that is indeed where he wants to go, at the end of the season, because the position that he's in with Leicester at the moment is phenomenal. Only Liverpool have more points, only City have more goals, no club's conceded fewer goals. So why would he leave at this point? You also think that if he went at the end of the season, he'd potentially have the opportunity to sign a couple of the players that he's worked with for another half a season. And also, depending on what he does do with Leicester for the rest of the season, his stock would have risen again. Having said that, obviously on the flip side, if he gets Leicester into the Champions League, which it looks like he pretty much definitely will, and then he's going back to play with an Arsenal side who might not be in the Europa League, then what's actually attractive for him there? I get why people are saying it, because it did seem like he was deliberately making a point, and maybe it's very attractive to him to be able to build a project and have a season with less pressure after Emery's dismissal. But I personally think he should be wary of managers who've been approached mid-season before and not made a comment and not been clear. Because when we think about, I know you don't rate Marco Silva, but Marco Silva at Watford, when Everton were first coveting his services, that really did absolutely put a pin in Watford's form. And I think, given that Leicester are going so well, if Arsenal do try and appoint him and it is for the end of the season, then they should try and sort of nip that in the bud now, so that, you know, he's really putting all his focus on keeping Leicester doing as well as they are for the rest of the season. Because I think for him as a manager and for Leicester as a club, it's really important for both of them to, you know, to see the season out. Because really, realistically, what is he going to be able to do with Arsenal for the rest of the season? He may as well go in the summer and start with a blank slate.
Thank you very much for joining me, Laurie, talking through the latest on all the managers. Watford on the lookout for a new manager, hoping to make an appointment very soon. Hayden Mullins will be in charge on Wednesday for their trip to Leicester. So not an easy game for him to be an interim charge. Arsenal on the lookout, and plenty more on the verge of sacking their manager, Marco Silva, perhaps at the top of that list at Everton. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll be back after this.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We were talking about Brendan Rodgers there and potentially opening the door, maybe leaving it slightly ajar for a move to Arsenal. That was after Leicester's dramatic 2-1 win against Everton. Kelechi Iheanacho in the 95th minute. It looked like it was given offside, but then VAR overturned the decision to give it onside, cueing rapturous scenes at the King Power Stadium. On the breakfast show early with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by the former Leicester winger Matt Piper. He was giving his views on Brendan Rodgers, whether he would make that move to Arsenal, talking about the game yesterday and Leicester's pretty decent position in the Premier League table.
Second in the table, and it was such an intense game last night, because I actually thought Everton played well. They came, Marco Silva set them up with obviously that deep block that Leicester have struggled with in the past. You've just mentioned his name there, Iheanacho. He comes on, he's been really struggling towards the end of last season and the start of this season, even getting booed by some of his own crowd, the Leicester fans. And it was such a brilliant finish. The way he took it, because it was last second, everyone just went crazy. But the actual technique in the goal and how he manufactured the chance for himself was absolutely awesome. And then he got a little greedy, didn't he? He's literally one of the only guys to fully celebrate twice.
Yeah, he did. It was interesting because this was it. It was as if he knew. He celebrated. Even when he saw the flag, he was still celebrating as far as I could see. So I think he knew. So then as soon, obviously, as it was given, you mentioned he celebrated again. And he had a part to play in Jamie Vardy's goal as well, didn't he? He was excellent when he came on.
He was. He really was. I think, we signed Zidane. He came on and his touch was superb. He was doing these little tricks and flicks that only confident players do. And it was great to see because he's still a real young man. You know, I think people forget that because he's been around the game quite a long time. Mm. He's only 22, 23 still. He went through them issues with his confidence last season, the start of this season. But he came on last night and he really was worth all that $25 million that we paid Manchester City for him.
Yeah, definitely. Well, look, I want to touch on a couple of the other players. One in particular, Ndidi, who's something of an unsung hero, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, he does the dark arts of the game really well. But again, I've got to credit Brendan Rodgers. He's definitely, him and his coaching staff have definitely taken Wilfred Ndidi's game to another level, because before he was just a destroyer. He'd just get the ball and then his passing was not great. His technique in the pass, his selection of pass was not great last season, but he was brilliant at the dark arts of the game. But this season, he's spraying balls, he's driving through. It was his run that created the Vardy chance. He's the one that drove through the middle of the pitch, passed it on to Iheanacho. So he really has lifted his game, and he is a top player in that position in the Premier League now. Mm.
And there was a bit of a delay in the first half, a VAR decision when Leicester, of course, awarded a penalty. Ben Chilwell going down under a challenge, and they looked at it over and over and over again. It took quite some time, and in the end they decided to overturn the decision. What was your thoughts? Did you think it was a pen?
Well, the trouble I've got, when I've seen it back, it was very light. If there was any contact, it was very light. So I understand that. The problem that I have with VAR is, once the referees made the decision on the football pitch, why not, if you're struggling with VAR, why not give him the opportunity to go to the monitor and check it himself? That was the only gripe that I had with that last night. It was light, but he already did give it. And we know that the bar is very high to overturn the referee's decision on pitch. So why not just say to Graham Scott, go and check the monitor, see if you still think it's a penalty. Because we're not using that facility in VAR, and I think that was a prime opportunity to use it. Mm.
I just want to touch on Brendan Rodgers. You just mentioned you give him more credit there, and he's doing a phenomenal job, I think it's fair to say. I think everyone would agree with that. He made some interesting comments, actually. He was given an interview, and he kind of hinted towards the fact that he's got a buyout, or likely got a buyout in his contract. In fact, yeah. I believe we can hear that right now.
It's something that's not in my control, really. You know, I made a move to come to here. I'm at a great club. I can work how I want to work. I absolutely love it here. So, you know, there's names will get thrown left, right and centre. But for me, my focus is very much on Leicester City.
And I'd like to believe that that is the case. But then, is there a concern, if you're a Leicester fan, that some of these other clubs that are out there that, of course, are looking for managers or potentially looking for managers, Arsenal being an obvious example, might there be a concern that they put an offer to him that's just too big to refuse?
I mean, that will always, you know, be a slight concern for Leicester City fans, and because of what he's come in and done. And this is one of the, unfortunately, as fans, this is one of the downfalls of success. You know, he comes in, he's made a real impact since coming in. He's definitely taken the team to 2-3 levels higher than what we were operating at last season. But I just can't see it. I really can't see it. I said at the start of the season, I believe Leicester will go top four this season. I've been proven right so far, but I just think, and I didn't say that on a whim. You look at Leicester City as a football club, the players that they have, the recruitment structure, the chairman, the King Power Group willing to spend money. It is a very attractive football club, even in the Premier League. So even though Arsenal are a huge club, I think I can't see Brendan Rodgers jumping ship and going across to Arsenal when I think something really special is happening at Leicester City.
Yeah, and of course the next game, Watford at home. Is it a dangerous time to play Watford, given that, of course, they've just removed their manager, and in fact we're just getting breaking news on the screen that Hayden Mullins and Graham Stack are to oversee training today. But is it a dangerous time, given that they have just sacked their manager?
I think it always is. I was hoping the Watford manager kept his job at least until after the Leicester game, because we all know, especially in Premier League football, that when a new coaching staff come in, whether it's temporary or permanent, they do normally get a bounce out of the team. So that's the backlash that you're hoping doesn't happen, especially from a Leicester point of view. But Leicester, they're just so good at the minute. They really are. If they're not playing you off the park and destroying you 9-0, they're finding a way to break down, you know, what's in front of them, like we've seen last night. They seem to have that knack this season of sort of what Liverpool have got. You know, difficult games, hard to break teams down, but they find a way in the end. So hopefully it'll be another 3 points for the Foxes.
Yeah, OK. I mean, at what point do you dare to dream now, do you think? And if Brendan Rodgers stays, let's just assume that Liverpool are going to win the league this year, which actually, in a few weeks' time, might prove like a giant leap. Let's just have a look towards next year. If this Leicester team continue the way they are, Brendan Rodgers stays, right? Maybe they make a couple of smart signings. Is it now the case that genuinely we are talking, going into next season, oh, you know, it's a three-horse race between City, Liverpool and Leicester City?
I think so. I mean, the difficulty is when you grow up. I've been in and around Leicester since I'm six years old. Played for the club, come all the way through, and you sort of. And I'm a fan of the club.
Yeah.
And when you're a fan of a club like Leicester City, it's hard to make that switch from, because even when I talk big now on local radio about we're going to finish top four, we're going to beat Everton. You know, this week we're going to beat Watford on Wednesday. People, Leicester fans, are tweeting me and texting me, stop talking like that, you're going to ruin it. And that's sort of the mentality of, you know, of a middle team in the Premier League. And it's hard to make that switch. I think we've got the right manager at the top now. And it's about that belief now. And I think he's already breathed that belief into the players. And now some of the fans are starting to get on board, and once that switch is made, that's when it's possible to start thinking of yourself as a big club.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. Some news from some of the press conferences coming in this afternoon. Obviously, we've got full fixtures coming up in midweek over the next three nights, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and then Thursday night from Pep Guardiola's press conference. He has confirmed that striker Sergio Aguero will not be fit for the Manchester derby on Saturday, but Pep Guardiola quite often says that players are not going to be fit, and then they end up proving to be Gabriel Jesus and Kevin De Bruyne have had very serious injuries over the last couple of years, and then they come back within days. So maybe take that with a bit of a pinch of salt. We're going to return our attention to one of the shocks of the weekend. It came at Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea lost 1-0 at home against West Ham, potentially decreasing the pressure on Manuel Pellegrini, or has it? Let's get the view from West Ham. Now, delighted to say we're joined by Dan Lawless from West Ham Fan TV. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dan. So, a crucial, crucial result. West Ham hadn't won at Stamford Bridge for a long, long time, but Aaron Cresswell getting the winner just after half-time. Did you really see this one coming, Dan, or were you worried about potentially being on the receiving end of a bit of a hiding?
I didn't see it coming at all, to be honest, mate. I was, you know, predicting a 3-1 loss, you know, if we're lucky. I was saying there's no chance. Even I was walking into the ground and chatting to the stewards, and I couldn't believe it. I was shocked, mate. I'm still shocked.
Manuel Pellegrini made some pretty significant selection decisions before the game, and obviously you're wondering how they're going to pan out. One of them was in goal, and it saw David Martin, obviously the son of West Ham great Alvin Martin, go in goal for his first Premier League start. You saw the emotion on his face after the game, in tears, having kept a clean sheet. in terms of his performance, was it a particularly good performance, or was it just a case of getting a clean sheet in your first Premier League start away at Stamford Bridge? What a significant moment for him in his career.
Well, I mean, his performance-wise, it was, you know, a major improvement on Roberto. You know, it's not something you'll look at and call it one of the all-time best goalkeeper performances just because of, he didn't have too much to worry about, but he did make some really good saves and he caught the ball. You know, there was a lot more calmness and a lot more confidence where you didn't have that sort of flappiness that we had with Roberto and him just constantly punching everything out. The fans were behind him from the start. We were singing and singing his name and things like that. And yeah, I mean, I'm really happy. I just don't know why he wasn't brought in a lot sooner, to be honest with you.
At the other end of the pitch, Dan, Manuel Pellegrini made the big decision to drop striker Sebastien Haller, who obviously was signed for £45 million over the summer, instead kind of going with a false nine playing forward players, but not an out-and-out striker. Do you think that that's a real credit to Manuel Pellegrini for having that tactical adaptability, flexibility away from home to go with someone different? And do you see that happening more often, or do you think that Pellegrini will revert back to Haller on a more regular basis?
Well, I mean, that's the way. I mean, yeah, you have to give him credit because we haven't seen that flexibility this season. That's been the biggest criticism of him, is that he'll just keep doing the same thing regardless. So it was a big move to drop Haller. I mean, I would have liked to seen Haller and Antonio up top together, but Antonio's fitness still isn't there. So, you know, if he can't play, then you have Haller. So I think maybe Wednesday we'll see Antonio drop to the bench and then we'll see Haller just because of fitness reasons. But hopefully we get to a point where we can see those two play together, because I think you'll see we'll get a lot more out of Haller in that way.
We know that obviously there is significant pressure on Manuel Pellegrini, as there is on a number of managers in the Premier League. So do you think that Saturday's win was perhaps a more important win for the manager more so than the club?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely buys him some time, that's for sure. It takes that little bit of pressure off. I think most of the fans are still of the mind that we need to go in a new direction and he may not be the guy to take us forward for the future. A lot of people are looking to younger managers. There's all these rumours about Eddie Howe. I think that's got people quite excited. So I still don't think he's the man, but it's bought him some time. I'd rather not have to be forced to change managers because it looks like you're going down. I'd rather, when you're changing managers, do it, take your time and really find the right person and make sure everything fits and get the right deal done. So I think that's good for the club and it's good for him. However, you know, it's the scrutiny is still there. So what he does in the next few games is going to be massive.
Looking ahead then to, obviously, we've got a busy midweek of Premier League fixtures on Wednesday night. West Ham make another tough trip away to Wolves. That's going to be a different test, though, because whereas on the weekend West Ham could kind of play on the counter-attack a little bit more and Chelsea wanting possession, away at Wolves won't necessarily be looking to dominate possession. They won't be looking to dominate the ball. So it's going to be a different type of test and a difficult one at that on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, that has been a sort of weakness in a lot of games. There were quite a few games that we lost. We had the most possession. But when teams decide to counter-attack on us, that's a big weakness. So I'm hoping that Pellegrini realises this has been the other problem, him not really observing what other teams do and not really studying the opposition ahead of time. So if he can do that and have a game plan, then that's ideal. But if we're going to be without Antonio, we're going to lose that directness, I think. So it's a big, big test for Pellegrini to see what he can do if, you know, Mikel Antonio, who has been, you know, our best player this season when he's played, what's he going to do without him? So that's going to be a big test for his tactical ability.
And just finally, Dan, looking at the Premier League table, it's amazing that the way that it is at the moment, you win one game and suddenly the outlook can look very different. After three straight defeats, West Ham are now up to 13th place, 4 points above the relegation zone. So it shows how important just even a couple of wins, getting on a tiny run, can mean that you're not looking over your shoulder and suddenly you're looking up the table and not worried about the threat of relegation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it you know, can change in an instant. And we would love to be looking up the table. I mean, for me, though, going on like 8-game, 7-league game run without a win is very sobering and has sort of brought me down to reality of thinking, yeah, you know, I would just be happy to avoid that relegation battle now. So I'm not at the moment where I'm dreaming of Europe with things happening. But yeah, I mean, as long as it's tight, there's a chance. You go on a few game run and then you're up there. I just hopefully we can sort of keep steady, have Fabianski back, which will be a big lift. You know, not a knock on Martin, but Fabianski is a brilliant keeper. And then maybe make some key signings in January and then we can look to push up and try and snatch Europe this season.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon, Dan. That was Dan Lawless from West Ham Fan TV talking about a crucial result, not just for West Ham, but maybe more crucially for the manager, Manuel Pellegrini, where there has been unrest, there's been unhappiness about his position and scrutiny over whether he's going to keep that job long term. But that was a massive result, and obviously he made some pretty big selection decisions at both ends of the pitch. He decided to finally drop Roberto, who's arguably one of, if not the worst goalkeepers in Premier League history, and went with David Martin, who's in his 30s now. He's the son of, obviously, a West Ham great and Alvin Martin, who spent 21 years at the club. And automatically, there was a different belief, a different confidence in him. And at the other end, you spend £45 million on a striker. It's been a long time. I think Tony Cotty was the last man for West Ham to score more than 20 goals in a top flight season. And they spend a lot of money on Sebastian Haller and they drop him or go with a different type of player in this type of a game. And fair play to Manuel Pellegrini. He got both decisions absolutely spot on. Now, maybe the goalkeeping decision was an easy one because Roberto couldn't really have been any worse. But he made those decisions and he got them right. And it seems to have bought them a bit of time. They got a tough game at Molineux on Wednesday night. And then they play Arsenal at home on the Monday night football. So some pretty big games for West Ham coming up. You get the sense there from Dan that even this win hasn't necessarily significantly taken the pressure off Manuel Pellegrini. I think at times it's the nature of football, how fickle people can be. If West Ham win their next couple of games and they move up to 7th or 8th in the table, Manuel Pellegrini will be the best thing since sliced bread. They lose their next couple of games and drop again really close to the relegation zone, it will be Manuel out will be being chanted and cheered around the London Stadium. It's just the nature of it. But he's one of a number that's under pressure. We've had three managerial changes in the last couple of weeks. Marco Silva is under big pressure. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will be looking over his shoulder, most definitely with Mauricio Pochettino being available. And Manuel Pellegrini is another that will be slightly worried about his position at this moment in time. So even though that was a really big result, it's the first time in well over a decade, I think, since 2002, I think I'm right in saying, is the last time that West Ham won at Stamford Bridge. So a big result for West Ham. Maybe, though, more important for Manuel Pellegrini. They're up to 13th in the table now, West Ham, after three straight defeats with that win at Stamford Bridge. They travel to Wolves on Wednesday night in a busy midweek of Premier League action that obviously over the next few days will be looking ahead to those games. It includes Manchester City's trip to Burnley tomorrow night. Liverpool play Everton on the Merseyside Derby on Wednesday night. Manchester United play Tottenham. And then obviously we have a couple of games on Thursday night as well.
This is Love Sport.